to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at GatesFoundation.org.
Y'all, Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to the big show today. Thank you so much for being around the kitchen table with us today, joining us for that cup of coffee. It's so nice to have you all with us. I'm going to begin by introducing our executive producer, Michelle York. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Thank you very much for asking.
I'm doing very, very, very well. Cooking anything interesting lately, huh?
A little tomato, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So for the big show today, you didn't.
But for the big show. Well, but of course, they're in season. Beautiful time.
Oh my God, we're in the heart of it. Even though a lot of people still are just watching the flowers go to baby greens and then kind of growing up a little bit and watching them every day and making sure that the bottoms aren't black or anything like that, other people are
harvesting,
spreading salt on their top of their hand and walking through the garden, rubbing the tomato on their shirt and hitting that little salt on the top of their hand and biting down into it, watching the juice fall down on their coveralls, so to speak. and of course, next to Michelle, as she dreams of that tomato I just talked about, mm-hmm. Shirley Sands, historian and archivist. How are you doing?
I'm great, thank you. I'm doing very well.
And across the glass wall, of course, the McLaughlin boys over there. How are y'all doing today, huh?
Good day, man.
It's a good day. Have you seen any yellow melons on the side of the road yet? I've seen them. Huh?
Not yet, but I was walking through the store and I saw some the other day and I flipped them over. All my good learning I've gotten from the show, I flipped them over.
Well, I mean, we're an educational format here.
Well, I mean, people, my wife, I said, you know what this is, right? And she said, no. I said, this is how you know when you got the right melon.
That's exactly right. When I turn those melons over, in the case, and I rub that little belly, I'm looking for that yellow stripe.
That's right.
Kind of remove that dirt. Sometimes they're still fresh from the field.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Anyway, y'all, it's really nice to have all of you with us as always, and thank you so much for choosing us today. You know that it is this time of year that as we drive around all those back roads, we see these wonderful fruit stands, these vegetable stands everywhere. I stopped earlier this week at one of my favorite ones right over the railroad track. I saw my favorite stacked up right there, beautiful boxes of Creole tomatoes, and I thought, oh, this is my surprise for my two girls on the radio show coming up this week. This is my surprise. The Mystery Basket Show is coming up because what do y'all think about the Mystery Basket Shows that we've been doing? We've done a one or so already. I mean, mm-hmm. So how's that working out?
I think they're great. I think
I'm
they're really fun.
Them.
They're a challenge.
Mm-hmm. You know, and y'all, the premise is that I find a mystery ingredient, and then the week before the show, like this week, I put the mystery ingredient in the center of that desk. Mm. This week it was a tomato.
Mm-hmm.
The thought is that I put an ingredient on that desk and then they have to represent the non-cook or just a family cook or the home cook and say, what would I do with this ingredient? So it was tomato. Now, what did you think about the tomato when I put it on your desk?
Well, I have to admit, the first one did not get cooked, per se.
Oh, it was salt on the top of your hand.
No, it was fresh bread with
fresh
a little mayonnaise.
Fresh white bread, mayonnaise, yeah, black pepper.
Sliced thin, little salt and pepper, beautiful sandwich.
You know, you have to go to confession after that sandwich. you have to go to confession. You have to ask for reconciliation.
Is that right?
That's right, after eating a sandwich, because that's a sinful sandwich. Huh?
Well, maybe there'll be time later today. Well, no, I'm going to wait till tomato season's over.
Shirley, what about you when you saw that tomato on your desk? What did you think? Because huh?
Well,
you're a girl from the Midwest. You're a farm
right.
girl. You're a farm
that's
girl.
Right. Grew up, of course,
corn.
Remembering it being preserved and all that sort of thing. But for me, I'm a baker kind of person. I love trying to find ways to bake. And I knew that tomatoes can be either sweet or savory when it comes to muffins. So I thought, okay, this is going to be a challenge. Let's find two really good recipes that can use a tomato.
Now, I have to say, the next mystery box, you can no longer do muffins or bread.
Oh.
I can't do
wait a minute. I don't like this rule.
Hold on. In the Midwest, it's, that's county fair territory.
That's true.
And the cookbooks, that the best cookbooks in the world, I was told by my mentor many years ago. He says, as you travel the country, pick up the state fair cookbooks from the regions that you're in, because that is the true cooking of the regions of America. What an unbelievable, unbelievable message that was.
Yep. You know, there's something beautiful about that thought,
well,
too.
It is.
Because,
it
you know, you think so much, and we've had this conversation a lot of times about the fairs and the festivals of Louisiana, which are all great. They generally all revolve around food, and a lot of times there are these cooking competitions. I think we're missing a little bit of the of that wholesome down-home cooking competition.
Regionally, we're such good cooks in Louisiana. We think of black pot cooking. We think of stove cooking. We think of backyard cooking. But in mid-America, where these different regions of cooking, people who may not cook as much outdoors or jambalayas or cooking crawfish season or things like that, they're into preserving the foods of the garden. They're into to having these, we talk about these kaleidoscopes, these stained glass windows of pantries that have all these beautiful vegetables in it. And they're carrying on the traditions of the marmalades and the jellies and the jams and the corn that has the tomatoes cooked in it in the jar and the turnips and the beets where you have the golden and the green, I mean, the green tomato.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden, they think of cooking a different way. And that's what makes America just so interesting.
And it's
cooking,
an art.
It is an
it's
art.
It's a true art form.
You think of tomatoes, the jarring of the tomatoes or the preserving them, and people don't think of tomatoes as sweet. You can actually do the these compotes of tomatoes. You can do the tomato and something, apple jelly. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do that's really interesting that we don't think about. Well, those who love gardens like I do, you know, at White Oak Plantation, every morning out there, and I happened to be walking out there last night, and just the tomatoes, the fig trees, the citrus trees, they're all just going crazy with fruit right now, just going crazy. And I actually walked, because Michelle, you remember that I clipped a couple of clippings of some antique fig trees from your grandmother's house after she passed away next to my tomato garden. I'm in the tomato garden, I look over, and here's these Sicilian fig trees right next to the tomatoes, both of them full of fruit. And I'm thinking to myself, only in Louisiana. Only in Louisiana.
Garden of Eden, right?
I tell a story often about this Sicilian grandmother who told me that the best way ever to eat a tomato, and she was kind of like slapping my hand as a grandmother would do a young child, as we were talking about how to make the best tomato sauces, and she was saying, everybody knows that the best way to eat a tomato is one warmed in the afternoon sun, that you rinse off or wipe on your shirt with a little salt, and you eat it right in the garden fresh. That is a tomato sauce of perfection. Mm-hmm. That's the way God eats a tomato sauce, right off of the vine. The juice is coming. That's a tomato sauce. So she says, why in the world, when you make a spaghetti or pasta, would you cook the tomato more than that? Just throw it and warm it up and put it on, you know. I remember my dad was a great tomato grower. I mean, he was a great gardener, and our garden was just filled with the beefsteaks and the celebrities and the Better Boy tomatoes. Of course, we also had some of those famous Creole tomatoes that are grown especially in St. Bernard and Plaquemine Parish, and recommended in so many of the recipes. As much a part of our cuisine as the tomato is, they were not always eaten, of course, here or in Europe. Tomatoes made their first appearance, some may say made their debut, as weeds in prehistoric times. Originating in Peru and Ecuador, the tomato became a cultivated crop in Mexico, with many, many, many varieties grown by the time that Cortez and his 400 Spaniards reached Mexico in 1519. Tomatoes are the fruit of a tomato plant because of how the tomato develops. Scientifically, it is a fruit, not a vegetable. It doesn't matter if we use it like a vegetable in salads or soups or main courses or savory. What's really interesting is that in 1893, Supreme Court decision was made that a tomato legally is a vegetable. The dispute arose because of a tariff imposed at the Port of New York. A U.S. Customs agent deemed that the Red Globe tomatoes to be a vegetable in spite of the importer's claim that the West Indian tomatoes are indeed fruit. So they had to go to court to settle it, so you won't have to pay the taxes. I'm going to do that with my car. I'm going to do it with my my car next time. I'm going to go to the Supreme Court. Anyway, you see, vegetables were subject to that 10% tariff that I was mentioning, and fruits were duty-free. So customs prevailed, and the court's reasoning was based on the use of the tomato. You know, so if you use it more.
Yeah. Right?
From its earliest discovery by the Europeans, it's been a misunderstood vegetable or fruit, whatever you deem it to be. The tomato is a member of the Solanaceae, or nightshade family. Or we just call it the nightshade family. The Solanaceae. I mean,
yeah,
you know.
Right. Pretty word, though.
Mean, well, us here in the studio who know Solanaceae. I mean, we can talk amongst ourselves, but by our friends, the nightshade family, which is a member of the eggplant. It includes the mandrake, the deadly belladonna, nightshade, the chili peppers, potatoes, tobacco, eggplants, all part of that particular family. It is the deadly properties of the mandrake and the belladonna that made the Europeans a bit unsure about the tomato. The Spanish gave the fruit to the Aztec, and they named it tamal and called it tomate, and they began using it as well in other Latin American contributions to cooking, like sweet peppers, chocolate, vanilla. They gave us all of that, so the tomato probably went into a chocolate dish at some point down there. Who knows? The Italians gained the tomato by the way of Naples, which was then, again, a Spanish possession. And, of course, in Italy, it was initially regarded as a medicinal plant, but finally entered Italian cuisine in the 16th century, usually without the chilies that were used in Spain. And there's several interesting takes on how the tomato got the name pomodoro, or the golden apple, in Italian, the pomme d'amour in France. The most likely goes back to the connection between the eggplant and the tomato. The tomato was a popular food used by the Moors in Spain. It was also known as the pomo del moro in Italian, and the Pomme de Mors in French, and, you know, in Louisiana, it's a Creole.
It's a Creole,
it's a
that's right.
Creole tomato. So, y'all, I don't guess I have to tell you that today, regardless of the tomato, what they call it, where it comes from, regardless of whether it's an indispensable part of your vegetable category or, of course, your fruit category, we're talking about it today. So you don't want to miss it. It's our mystery box, and, of course, we have a song about the tomato.
The sun has left and forgotten me. It's dark, I cannot see. Why does this rain pour down? I'm gonna drown in a sea of deep confusion. Somebody told me I don't know who. Whenever you are sad and inside you, and you'll find you gotta hold on through the night. Hang on, things will be all right, even when it's dark and not a bit of sparkling seems that sunshine from above, spreading rays of sunny love. Just hang on.
Hi everyone, this is Pat Mitchell-Worley, and coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan, we'll spend time with Cowboy Mouth at the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival. Plus, our feature host Dick Rachelson will continue his look at the real Beal. That's all coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan.
Tonight at 11 on KRVS.
Host Megan Brown for Encore. Join me as we journey through the continuing timeline of our culture. We'll discover the music, relive festivals, and get to know the people. Sunday afternoons at 3 here on KRVS.
From the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, this is KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, now broadcasting in HD radio technology.
Alienation at the salsa bar. Marinara sauce goes way too far. A gentle carnivore in Alfredo's reach.
orders a veggie burger in Long Beach. But hold the tomato.
Everybody, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. And today we're talking about our favorite season this time of year. It's tomato season. And today, as you know, we're doing our mystery basket where I choose an ingredient and give it to my two ladies here on the, and all of us create a recipe out of it and talk about our challenges with this recipe. And of course, we chose the tomato. And so we're going to have some great recipes to share with you. Now, when you read articles about growing tomatoes, there's little disagreement on how to get fresh fruit, but that doesn't mean one single thing about whether you're going to get a tomato or not. It's amazing how, when I think back to Papaya Sarang growing thousands of tomato plants and every one of them having wheelbarrows of tomatoes, and I have such trouble getting one tomato off of my plants. I pray to the Papaya Sarang God up in heaven to get... Anyway, we do have a number of great tomato varieties that grow well in Louisiana. Michelle, we were talking about a couple.
Yes, we were. You know, there's this variety called Indeterminate.
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 I never think about that when I go to buy a tomato, but there is a variety.
But there you go. But I bet you think about Big Beef, Pink Girl, or Monte Carlo, of which these are examples.
They're Big Beef, I think about, and Pink Girl, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Once these tomatoes are planted, they grow, they produce fruit, they keep ongoing, yielding fruit until
the
frost.
And then what happens? Then the frost kills them.
Jack Frost arrives and done.
And then Shirley, but we have an answer to that, right?
That's exactly right. The variety is called the determinate varieties, and they are tomato plants that produce a limited amount of fruit, reach a fixed compact height. Growers, like those who like to grow Celebrity, they're very popular down here.
The Absolutely,
Olympic and Spitfire.
Are.
So rather than continuing to produce and continuing to produce like the indeterminate, like Michelle mentioned, these have a very limited time in which they give their fruit.
And now, of course, if you live in Louisiana, it's great to know that there are some heat-tolerant varieties as well. These type of tomatoes were designed to have a heat-set genetic makeup, meaning that they are extraordinarily tolerant to the heat and the dry spells that we have in Louisiana. And some of the heat-tolerant varieties, of course, are things that you've heard of, like the Sun Leaper, the Florida 91 people talk about all the time, the Solaset.
Right.
Solaset people love. Finally, small varieties like cherry tomatoes are becoming very, very, very popular, especially now that people are into salads and into pastas, that they like to throw in fresh tomatoes right into the sauce. These little bitty cherry varieties are really great. They produce fruit very quickly before the hottest months of the summer kick in, but they also stand up to the high temperatures nicely and are productive regardless of the heat as long as they're watered regularly. And great choices are some of my absolute favorite, the Super Sweet 100s. I mean, they're just like eating little balls of sugar because they're so small. The Sweet Chelsea, the Cherry Grand, there's also those wonderful Carbon Black varieties.
Oh, those are so good.
They're the sweetest of all of these small varieties, the Carbon Blacks. They're absolutely wonderful.
They're such a misnomer because you look at it and you think, dear God, who would eat that? And then you bite into it and you wouldn't want to eat anything else.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And while it's true that there are a few variations from where you live and the soil or rain amounts, there's a few basic concepts that everybody agrees on.
First, tomatoes should be grown for flavor.
Why would you grow them for anything else? For beauty? Like the rose or what? I mean, huh?
Well, I can't imagine, but... flavor.
Okay, so they grow for flavor, yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's really
You need true. To let them ripen on the vine, and that's one of the problems, I think, a lot of times when you go into the grocery store, when we start talking about the big volume, you know, the tomatoes haven't been ripened on the vine, and it doesn't taste like a tomato anymore. Mm-hmm. You need to eat that tomato just as soon after picking as you possibly can.
Now that's the key. That's why Papaya Sarang used to take us through the garden with the salt shaker. And whether it was in the morning when the dew was on the tomatoes or whether it was the afternoon sun when they were hot like corn in the garden. And Shirley, you remember we talked about peeling the shucks off of the corn and just bringing a block of butter in the garden and rubbing the corn and eating picking it right off of the
been
cob.
Been there, done that.
Absolutely. The tomatoes, the same
exactly.
Thing. And never refrigerate them, my
never,
God.
Never, ever, ever.
That's right.
I love a warm tomato.
Well, and I think that's, and maybe this is the idea, the encouragement to grow your own tomatoes, because if you're really into cooking, you can go out every morning, choose what's perfectly ripe then, and you've got it for that day's cooking, and it's that constant, you know, refreshing and discovering every morning what's new and what's ready.
Well, I want to share something with y'all before we get into Michelle's recipe here. You know?
Okay.
And I want to share with my engineering guys, too, because, I mean, they love experimentation of food. But this is for everybody. This is something I discovered talking to this wonderful gentleman walking around the inside of one of the plant stores. And I have to set the scene for you. This gentleman had his khakis on, and he had one of those hats with the green little, it was a farmer's hat, but he had a little green visor that in the front bill of the hat.
Okay.
You've ever seen any of those, huh? And he's about, I'm going to guess, 85 years old. A little bit crouched over, but still a great specimen of a man, a farmer, you know. He had his brogans on, and he's walking through one of the stores, and I see him, and he's looking down the shelves, and I kind of pass him up, and I said, hello, how are you doing? And he said, you're Chef John Fultz. I said, I am. And I said, you looking for some plants today? No, he said, I'm not looking for any. He said, I just love the stores. He said, I don't plant a garden anymore, but he said, I made great gardens. I said, you don't plant anymore? He said, no. He said, what are you looking for? I said, well, I'm looking for some fertilizer. I'm looking for some Miracle-Gro or whatever. And I said, I'm not having much luck with my tomatoes. Well, he mentioned tomatoes. I said, I don't have much luck growing my tomatoes. I try to grow too many of them. I try to grow too many varieties. And it should be simple. My grandfather and dad were great tomato growers. And he says, let me tell you something. He said, you want to be a successful tomato grower? Let me tell you how to do it. And this is what he told me, and I want everybody to hear this. He says, one or two tomato plants will give a house all you need. He said, so if you want two varieties, get one good local tomato variety, then you get one of those small ones, like for the salads we were just talking about, like the Carbon Blacks or one of those. He said, you ever see those old milk cartons or boxes that people throw away? He said, you see them sometimes in the dump, these square boxes that... I said, yeah. I said, I see those. He said, well, let me tell you what you do. You go pick up a bag of that topsoil right there, and you pick up a bag of that potting soil, and you pick up a bag of that manure over there, that composted manure. So you see that? He said, that's your investment right there. He said, then you get a little bit of this cloth, this gardening cloth. And he said, you line the inside of one of those milk cartons or a box just like that. Make sure it's got all the holes in it because the roots got to breathe. He said, that's why a tomato plant won't grow in a bucket. People think you can put a tomato in a bucket, but it won't because the roots can't get air. He said, you put that garden cloth down in there. And then he says, you mix up 50% of that topsoil with 50% of that potting soil because that's got all the nutrients in it. He said, then you put a shovel of composted manure in it. You mix all of that up. He said, then you fill that box up all the way to the top. He said, you know, just one of them little milk carton boxes, you know. I said, milk carton or milk box that you put gallon jar? He said, you know, one of those about a foot and a half square and about a foot and a half tall, you know, with all the holes in the side. I said, okay, I know what you mean. He says, then you put one tomato in the middle of it and you put your pole down in it. And he says, if you do like I do, he said, you run a little watering hose hooked up with a little timer where it's going to sprinkle a little water on the roots, not on the leaves of that plant. Say, you can buy one of those at any one of these little garden stores for about $10 and hook it to your faucet with a little timer with a battery in it. He says, it'll water it for you.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you won't have to weed anything. You can move that tomato around if the wind's blowing too much. He says, that water, he says, you don't have to fertilize it. You don't have to do anything. You only got to tie that plant up. And he says, if you don't want to do that, just put a cage around. He says, Chef, you're going to make more tomatoes than you can eat with two tomato plants. That's all you need, I promise you. He said, and if you want to really become a farmer, plant four of those boxes. I said, that's a fabulous idea. He said, well, you see, when you reach my age, and he said, you don't want to get out there and hoe. He said, well, when the madam don't want you to get out there and hoe. He said, that's my problem. She don't want me out there in that sun. She says, I don't need to do that anymore. But he said, I still got to put my hand in the dirt. And he said, and I got to come over. He said, you know, he said, you smell this store? I said, yes, I smell it. He said, this smell is what I love, right? Yeah, so I felt like I had one of the greatest gifts of gardening I had ever had. So that's my tomato message to everybody they got. Now, where do you get the milk cartons? Of course, course, they belong to the milk companies. I'm not recommending you go find one and steal a milk company's. What I'm saying is, if you happen to find one somewhere, yeah. it has value. Bring it home and get that cloth. And you need the cloth in to keep the dirt from falling out, but you need the milk carton because it has all the holes to aerate the saw. What do you think about that? I'm looking at the engineering department here.
Well, I think it's a great idea, John. And, you know, now you can buy those things in the store. They sell them for storage and things.
Well, I think that's exactly what he said. He said you can find them in the stores. I didn't know whether he meant they discarded them or whether they sold them. But he said you can get them in the store. You don't have to go steal them from the milk company.
You know, we used to have to steal them, but now you can buy them.
well, that's good. One. But fill it up half. So it's about a bag. You put one bag of topsoil, one bag of potting soil. You mix it up because the potting soil has all the nutrients. Got that vermiculite, but all that other stuff in it as well. And then you put a big shovel of composted manure in, and you shovel it all around. It has to be composted manure so it doesn't burn the plant. And you stick that one tomato in one of those plastic poles in the middle of it, all the tomatoes in the world. So that's what I'm doing now, Michelle.
That just sounds brilliant.
Yeah.
It sounds great. It's a great idea.
I was talking to one of my doctors one time, talking about our vegetable book, and he said that his brother, and I made a note of this, his brother is a doctor as well, and so it made me think about it when you were talking about just dripping a little bit of water running a line. He actually sets up an IV. It's tomato plants.
Hey, you use what you've got, right?
That's a great photo we have to get.
Well, I thought it was very interesting because he told me, he said, and this is where I got the idea of, he says, if you plant, you can plant one eggplant in there as well, in a box. And then he said, you go ahead and put two basil plants on each side of the eggplant. That way, when you get ready to cook your eggplant, you have your basil cooking, growing in the same little box. Same thing with tomatoes. Put a little oregano in the bottom of your box. So, I mean, it's really interesting how these little gardens are. That's what my garden looks like this year.
Is that right?
That's right. And I can move it around I can move my little plant around or whatever, but I'll find a place for it. Now, my movable garden, I call it.
I remember a couple of years ago making Guy DeSalvo's premier marinara sauce.
I see.
Love this sauce. And I remember when I started doing it, you know, it was a Sunday night. I was with some friends and we were making spaghetti, okay? And we started late and we decided we were going to do our own sauce and we had these tomatoes. Well, we started peeling. Now, can I tell you how hard it is to peel, deseed a tomato?
Yeah, if you don't know how to.
If you don't know how to do it. So I remember we had done that somewhere along the way on a radio show, and Steve Zucker, who was the executive chef at Lafitte at that time, was talking about how to easily do it. And so I had to put in an emergency 911 tomato call to Steve that night. But, you know, once you choose that tomato in making your own marinara sauce, nice, firm, beautiful tomato. You take the stem off with a little paring knife, and you put that X on the bottom, just a little X with the paring knife, and put it in a wire basket, and then you drop it in a pot of boiling water for about 30 seconds to a minute, just till the skin kind of starts to peel away. You take it out of the water, you put some cold running water over it, and then that skin just kind of peels right off, and you can squeeze the seeds out.
And some people do put the little X on the bottom by the stem. I always put my X on the top of the tomato. Just put it
nice,
yeah, because that way it just folds, the skin folds right off, and you peel down to the stem. But either way, people do it either way.
Beautiful, and I just think that's such a, I don't know, one of those little tips. Maybe I'm late to the game, but I love that tip of actually being able to, you know, get to the to the heart of the matter.
Remind me to tell you when I do my recipe of technique for peeling garlic that way. Okay.
So in making the marinara sauce, you got a little pot and you put 1/4 cup of extra virgin olive oil, 1/4 cup of vegetable oil in it. Heat it over medium high heat, and then you're going to put in your garlic slices, about 10 cloves of garlic, but sliced. And as I've learned from you over these years, you slice it so that you get more of that, more of the oil from the garlic. You get more of that garlic smell and
slice
flavor.
Slice very thin, too. Very, very thin. Mm-hmm. You can almost see through the garlic. The old Italians slice their garlic, believe this or not, with a razor blade.
I can believe it, because it's kind of hard to get the slices, to be honest. I mean, you have to have a very sharp knife, and it's a very, I mean, the pods are generally small, even the big toe, you know. I mean, you don't have a lot of room there. But anyway, so you saute this garlic about 3 minutes. You add your tomatoes in there, blend well, add a little chicken stock, maybe about 1 cup, just to keep the moisture going.
How much tomatoes you putting in there?
I put 24. 24 Roma.
Of the little Roma.
24 of the Roma.
Plums, yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Roma tomatoes. Saute for about 5 to 7 minutes. You add some basil, like 12 large basil leaves, nicely chopped in there. Put a little cayenne pepper. And now you got your pasta topping. You toss it with your little bit with your already boiled pasta. Put the pasta in the middle of the plate, dollop the marinara sauce on top. You might want to sprinkle a little fresh Parmesan cheese on it. Maybe you want to drop another basil leaf.
Right,
really
now,
good
now,
and
now,
fresh.
Well, now what you've done is follow the advice of the Sicilian woman in the little town of Amato, which is where I was, Amato. When she had a little wood oven baking, clay oven baking bread in her kitchen, and she was the one who told me about how to make a proper tomato sauce. And when I looked at her, she says, you should never, ever cook your tomato sauce longer than it takes to boil your pasta. I said, well, it's only 12 minutes. That's impossible. She says, you eat a tomato at its best out the garden fresh. Why would you cook it more? So, I mean, her thought process was, now what you've done by peeling the tomato and then the aromas of course are really nice, and then cutting it in, did you squeeze the seeds out?
I did, yeah.
So you peel it, you squeeze it, and all the seeds came out, and then you just dice that real nice because it's easy to dice them at that point. 24 sounds like a lot of tomatoes, but they're Roma, so they're small.
Right.
And you're trying to make a quart of tomato sauce, so I mean, you need 24, actually, 2 dozen. And if you have a little bit extra, you can put it in one of those little pint jars, put a lid on it real tight, put in a pot of boiling water for 18 minutes, and you have your beautiful tomato sauce to go on the shelf, and it'll last right there on the shelf. But isn't that a beautiful scene of two old Italian gentlemen sitting with a little espresso at a table in the backyard with two razor blades in the hand slicing that garlic very thin? I've seen that scene.
That's beautiful.
It's embedded in my brain. Yeah. Now, the marinara sauce that you're talking about, olive oil and garlic, and sauteing that garlic, you don't want to cook it until if it starts to brown around the edge, it's too much.
Yeah, then you got to start over.
Because it's
kind of like the roux.
It's burning the roux, exactly. Your garlic gets very bitter when it starts to brown or over brown. So just watch the edges of that very thin sliced garlic. And by slicing it thin like that, it breaks apart in the oil too. So when you add your tomatoes in and start to stir around, you can't hardly find your garlic much anymore, right?
Well, and this is the kind of recipe that kind of flies in the face of you can't feed the family quickly, with fresh things.
Well,
in fact, you can.
Well,
here's a perfect example.
And it also is perfect for this time of year when people are trying to bring you a basket of tomatoes and you say, oh, no, I have enough because my neighbor brought me some. You know what? Take them, y'all. Take them and get
That's
in the
right.
kitchen and bottle some sauce with those tomatoes. It only takes you, as you said, from the poaching of the tomato, pulling the skin off, squeezing the seeds out of them, chopping them up, throw them in a pot with olive oil and garlic. You can even buy the garlic already in the store, chopped. Just throw it in there, and then you go ahead and jar it and put it in the jars and boil it. Just follow your canning instructions, and you'll have beautiful fresh tomato sauce all year long. Anyway, y'all, that's the first recipe, which I think is very very nice and interesting.
And that recipe.
And that's going to go.
I don't make it often enough.
And Guy DeSalvo, a great Italian chef from Sicily. Well, he's a Sicilian chef who got to America. He lives in Pennsylvania near Latrobe, Pennsylvania. In fact, outside of Pittsburgh, he's the greatest Italian chef I know. And y'all, we're going to be back in a minute with Shirley's recipe.
Mm-hmm.
And then
yours.
Drum roll my recipe.
That's right.
See you in a minute, y'all.
My baby's in the kitchen with a look in her eye. She's a woman on a mission. I'm a man who knows why. When my baby gets to cooking, I get weak in the knees. And she's preheating her oven to 300 degrees. She takes two cans of tomatoes, dumps them in a pan, and adds enough brown sugar to kill a normal man. She takes her homemade bread.
Greetings, I'm Jake Hebert.
And I'm Adam Chouard. Join us every Friday at midnight for the Sound Club radio program.
Your home for left field pop gems from today to yesteryear.
Here on 88.7 FM KRVS.
Looking for a youthful perspective on classical music?
Well, I'm going to play the Liszt Transcendental Etude No. 7. It's very exciting and energetic, and there's hard-hitting parts and soft parts, and overall, it's a pretty good piece.
Look no further than From the Top. Join me, Christopher O'Reilly, for our 10th anniversary season, each week right here on NPR.
Tuesday night at 7 on KRVS.
Soy Fernando Pérez Viar. Únanse a mi programa Espacio Latino este domingo a las 5 p.m. para que escuche buena música latina e información sobre la cultura latina aquí en el sur de Luisiana.
That's Espacio Latino, coming up this Sunday evening at 5 here on KRVS.
Regional Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS-FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
I love tomatoes. I love tomatoes. You can keep your carrots and potatoes. I love tomatoes.
I got tomatoes in my pocket, tomato-colored clothes. I carry a tomato everywhere I go. I got tomatoes on my windowsill, tomatoes on my bed. I sleep each night with a tomato on my head.
I love tomatoes.
I tell you what, I just don't know about that girl right there. She likes tomato-flavored toothpaste. Come on, she sleeps with a tomato on her head. That girl needs to see somebody.
That's true.
Hey, y'all, it's tomato season in Louisiana, and it is so nice to have all of you with us. Shirley, before we get started on your recipe, I know you're always looking for a couple of great books for the library. What did you find this year? Anything?
Yes, I have a couple that I think people might find interesting. The first is called The Tomato Cookbook by Louisiana's own Roy Gus Jr. Not surprisingly, of course, he brings recipes and a perspective that's very Louisiana. And the other is by Michelle Anna Jordan. It's called The Good Cook's Book of Tomatoes. It's part of a larger culinary series. It's a little bit, you know, it's a pretty scholarly kind of thing, but it has lots of interesting information and over 200 great recipes. So, but Gus's book is very, very Louisiana. So that's really where we're going with our books. And of course, everything out there, there's so many different kinds that of cookbooks out there, but these are great ones.
Certainly on vegetables and tomatoes, yep. And there's a lot more of them coming out, especially since home gardening and
so popular.
And sustainability and all of this, these things are
in fact,
on the forefront.
Almost every one of your the agricultural sites, LSU Ag and every other state in the world, I know Iowa does, they always have great recipes attached to all their information on vegetables.
Well, I'll tell you what I love too is that you can drive just about in front of every elementary school and they have gardens now, and
yes.
The tomatoes are up right now, so I can imagine the kids wide-eyed watching the tomatoes cut. And that's so great because now they know where tomatoes come from.
That's right.
Just a couple of facts. Initially, tomatoes were grown largely as ornamental plants and the fruit was thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine that? We still do that today, I think.
Sometimes.
Before it became a popular food, the tomato was examined for possible medicinal use. It was discovered that an alkaloid called tomatine was beneficial to treating diseases of the skin, so it became medicinal. Tomato makes its first written appearance in the U.S. as in an herbal publishing piece in 1710. What do you think about that? Our buddy Thomas Jefferson makes reference to the tomato in his writings and acknowledge both the horticultural and the culinary possibility of this new tomatasa. In 1847, commercial processing of tomatoes began at Lafayette College, where else? Pennsylvania, where the DeSalvos are from, right? Chief gardener at Lafayette College, Woodhill Crosby, spawned the tomato canning industry when he soldered lids on tin pails, leaving holes in the top that he could stuff the whole tomatoes in. He soldered a small tin plate over that hole and then sterilized them in boiling water.
Interesting. Huh?
You don't have to do all that. Just get an amazing
that's
job.
Right. Not
easier today.
And then finally, y'all, 1869 in Camden, New Jersey, the Campbell Soup Company began its famous, or perhaps infamous,
that's right,
depending how you look at it, condensed tomato soup. By 1900, the company had produced, in only 30 years, 20 billion cans. Today, research is being done on the golden tomato, for research suggests that this variety is higher in beta-carotene than the red ones, and I just love that yellow tomato, that golden apple, as the Aztecs called it. So anyway, Shirley, you are now challenged with your mystery ingredient.
That's right. Well, I was trying to think of a way to make tomato a supporter of the whole cast without, you know, we have the side dishes and things, and sometimes you'll be putting together an Italian meal or a menu that you'd like some kind of bread with it, but yet you know, the cornbreads and things just aren't interesting. So I found, and for many of us, we used to go in the store and you find these little containers of sun-dried tomatoes and olive oil, or dried sun, you know, the sun-dried tomatoes in a little pack, and you think, what the heck do you do with those? Well, I have your answer. It's called sun-dried tomato muffins.
Ah, that sounds good.
Oh, they really are. 1 cup of milk, 3/4 cup of vegetable oil, which tells you they're going to be pretty light if you do it right. 1 egg, couple of cups of all-purpose flour, nothing special. 1/4 cup of grated Parmesan cheese, a tablespoon of chopped fresh basil, or a teaspoon of dried basil leaves. You know, you can get the fresh basil. You just take your kitchen scissors, just cut it up into tiny little pieces, and that'll work just fine. 2.5 teaspoons of baking powder, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, then 1/2 cup of chopped sun-dried tomatoes in olive oil drained.
Mm.
Now, you can use, you know, the ones that you just rehydrate, but if you use the ones that are in the oil, they just give a greater moisture to the savory muffin.
Right,
it just holds it better.
That. Yeah, I can see that.
And then, something you may not think about, 1/4 cup pimento stuffed olives.
Oh, perfect. Perfect
and
with it.
And grated Parmesan cheese.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So you heat the oven to 400, grease the bottoms only of a 12-tin muffin tin, or line it, of course, with baking. Beat milk, oil, eggs in a large bowl, stir in the flour, the 1/4 cup of cheese, the basil, baking powder, salt, you know, until you moisten it, just till the flour is moistened. Fold in the eggs and the olives. Divide the batter, of course, between all the cups. Sprinkle with the cheese. Bake 18 to 20 minutes. Remove immediately. Put on a wire rack. Serve warm if you want to. But it has that extra flavor that really goes well with another dish. With a pasta dishes or anything, it's a great side. The flavor of the tomatoes and the olives just is nice.
You heard that song a while ago that you played about the tomatoes on her windowsill?
Mm-hmm.
What about you, David? What do you think about when you think of a tomato?
Well, you know, one of my favorite things is something that mom used to make, haven't had in a long time, is the angel hair pasta with the cherry tomatoes.
Oh, I love
Italian
that too.
Sausage and some pesto mixed in there, and just... It's good stuff.
You know, I love the seafood pastas, like the very simple shrimp, clams, like the Manila clams, even oysters.
Yeah.
You just quickly just turn in butter just to cook a little bit. And, of course, you're going to have garlic in it. You're going to have a little bit of your herbs, your basil. Naturally, some little red pepper flakes that's going to heat it up.
Mm-hmm.
A handful of those red and yellow cherry tomatoes or those little pear tomatoes just tossed in that warm butter or olive oil, whichever you choose, and then that over linguine, the clams or the shrimp will give it that great seed. It takes 5 minutes to make it.
Well,
and the tomatoes is the star of the show.
Even sun-dried tomatoes and feta cheese and
absolutely
onions
beautiful.
And garlic and cucumbers, just like a nice Greek salad.
Oh, wow, you're right.
You know.
No, absolutely simplicity. Just as you said a minute ago, right off of the vine. That's the way my dad used to love to eat a tomato. He said there was no really better way to eat a tomato than just like that off of the vine. That's why he grew them, you know. So that was a great... anyway, y'all, I'm going to give you my recipe
mm-hmm.
here.
Which is fabulous.
Creole tomato basil pie.
Mm.
Creole tomato basil pie. And I want all of you to listen to this. This is something I discovered. It has a heavy Italian influence, but let me tell you where it first appeared as far as for the folks who gave me the recipe, in Natchitoches, Louisiana, in the oldest city in Louisiana, thought to be obviously of Creole origin. They thought maybe the Spanish from the Los Adios fort up there at Natchitoches had maybe contributed some to the flavor of this particular dish, but naturally the French soldiers over at Fort Saint-Jean-Baptiste probably added the crawfish and who knows what. Maybe some of the smoked sausage to it, right? Anyway, y'all, it's a simple recipe, but you have never tasted anything better. And I want you to think of a quiche when you think of this, but a quiche that has been elevated to the, to the pinnacle of fine dining. Let me put it that way. You're going to begin with 4 or 5 very nice and ripe Creole tomatoes. That's important. You want it to be firm, but yet ripe. You don't want it to be mushy, obviously. You're going to slice them into 1/4-inch slices. Now, you can peel them if you want to, but it's not necessary that you peel them. You just take a very sharp knife on a cutting board, and you slice those ripe tomatoes firm, straight down, 1/4-inch slice, 1/4-inch thick, and then you're going to put about 6 or 8 layers of paper towels across the top of your counter, and you're going to lay the slices on top of the paper towels, because the paper towels will suck all of that extra moisture out of the center where the seeds are, and it's going to help to remove all of that moisture that would wet the ingredients too much when you're cooking the pie. It's important that it sits on that paper towel at least an hour, and maybe even change them out when you flip it over after 30 minutes or so, so the paper towels can suck additional moisture out. So you're going to have those four or five tomatoes sliced, half a cup of torn basil leaves divided, and this is basically putting a pie together is what you're going to do. You're going to preheat that oven at 350, by the way. So you're going to have your ingredients. You're going to have a half a cup of torn basil leaves over here. You're going to have that 9-inch pie, pre-baked pie shell. You're going to bake
Pre-baked.
You're going to bake it first. Just kind of brown it a little bit. Move it off to the side. So now you're going to have your little bowls, Michelle and Shirley. You're going to have a half a cup of torn basil leaves over here. You're going to have a cup of Monterey Jack cheese over here. You're going to have a little half a cup of olive oil with a little paintbrush in it, a little pastry brush, right? You're going to have a half a cup of julienne or even ground or chopped into Cuisinart andouille sausage I like. Now, you can put tasso, which is a little spicier and coming from the Spanish side and may have been origin to this dish. But I like the andouille. And chop it in a Cuisinart or grind it. That way it's nice and fine. You're going to divide that half a cup. A cup of fresh Louisiana crawfish tails, which tells you that the tomato and the crawfish are seasoned at the same time, which makes this dish really special. You're going to have that cup of crawfish tails over here. A half a cup of cheddar cheese shredded and placed over here. A half a cup of Parmesan cheese over there. Salt and pepper. Granulated garlic, kind of to taste over here. And then you're going to have one small Bermuda onion. I like shallots, too, because shallots are really, really small. They have that wonderful flavor, the French shallots, and they have the purple color like the Bermuda onion. So you could actually use shallots and slice them very, very thin, almost like the Italians did with the razor blade. Then you're going to have about a half a cup of those sliced or small Bermuda onion, either one sliced very thin. And then a cup of those seasoned Italian breadcrumbs. So y'all with me so far? Mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of ingredients, but let me tell you what we're going to do with them. Very simple. Your oven is preheated to 350. You've par-baked that pie crust, and you've moved it off to the side. Now, your tomatoes have been sitting for an hour on those layers of paper towels, so they're well-drained, right? Mm-hmm. So the sogginess has been removed from the possibility of your pie. Now, you're going to create layers here. So you're going to start with a layer of Monterey Jack cheese on the bottom of your pie crust. And you can even sprinkle a little breadcrumbs in the bottom if you want to. It'll pick up some of that extra moisture that'll fall down there. So the Monterey Jack, remember, you're coming with layers, so you don't want to put all your Jack down there. You got to save enough to go all the way up. You're going to have about 2 to 3 layers, so you should think about dividing it in three, right? All your ingredients. So on top of the Monterey Jack, you're going to put a nice, you're going to go around, you're going to shingle like almost the scales of a fish. You're going to go around that the top of that Monterey Jack with your tomato slices. You're going to paint the tomato slices, just one layer, with a little bit of olive oil, and you're going to sprinkle the top of it with basil, andouille, a little bit of your crawfish. Remember, divide everything by three. Cheddar, cheese, and Parmesan. So you with me now? So you have your tomatoes down there sitting on top of that layer of that Monterey Jack, and now you've come on top of that with a little olive oil, paint it on, and then your basil, you're going to do your crawfish, your cheddar, cheese, and your Parmesan. You're going to season it, y'all, with salt, pepper, and granulated garlic, because you have to season each layer, and then put a little bit of those Bermuda onions thinly sliced, or the shallots, okay, right on top. Then you're going to come with layer number two. So what are you going to do? You're going to put that Monterey Jack on again, and then you're going to come on up with the tomatoes. You're going to paint them. You're going to sprinkle them with the basil, andouille, the crawfish, the cheddar, the Parmesan, salt and pepper again. And you're going to just keep on coming, right? Someone told me that they had actually taken like a tablespoon of a seasoned Italian breadcrumbs and sprinkle all the way across the center as well. What I don't particularly care about that is that it keeps the layers from sticking together well, because you want it to, as the pie cooks, the cheese will melt, the basil and all of that will they'll come together on the inside of that pie. When you get up to the top, once you fill it all the way up, you're going to top it with a cheese right across the top, and then you're going to put a nice layer of the seasoned Italian breadcrumbs, and y'all, then you're going to put it in that 350 degree oven, and it's going to take about an hour to an hour and a half to bake, because you want to brown the top of the breadcrumbs. But remember, that slow cooking will allow the tomatoes to cook, the cheese to melt all the way through, the basil and andouille to kind of put that flavor across the center, and
to kind of get acquainted.
not only to get acquainted, huh?
Come close.
They're gonna be so close they'll be fighting by the end of the night. They're gonna love each other so much they're gonna be in a quarrel by the end of the night, huh?
Oh.
So then you're gonna allow the pie to cool slightly. I say totally. I actually like to put the pie in the refrigerator.
Do you like to eat this cold?
No.
Okay,
I like to put it in the refrigerator because then it sets all the way. It firms up nicely.
Okay.
Then you can take your knife the next day and cut little beautiful pie-shaped wedges out of it, put it in the microwave with a little piece of napkin on the top of it, and hit it on warm, you know, for 30 seconds, and just slowly warm it to however hot you like it, warm all the way to hot.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get you a nice little salad on the side.
Mm.
Everything you want is in that pie. Freshness of the garden, all of the, you got a little bit of meat with the andouille, you got all that other wonderful stuff.
You got crawfish, you got cheese.
It is absolutely got all the
heaven
cheese.
Heaven in a pie crust.
Got all the cheese melting together.
If you're going to be serving it for a dinner, you know, serving it right away, how long do you want to let it sit?
Well, you have to let it sit enough for those juices to redistribute, otherwise you're going to cut it and it's going to fall apart. So it has to cool a minimum of 3 hours.
Okay. Wow.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
But at 3 hours, remember, you got melted cheese in there at this point. You got all of that stuff happening.
Yeah.
It's going to take 3 hours on the counter for that. And normally, I'll just kind of put it up on the top of the stove there somewhere away just so it kind of stays warm, but yet it'll start to eventually cool.
Okay.
Recipe, all three recipes on our website, y'all.
Yes.
Just go to jpauls.com. Go to Stirring It Up, the radio show. Remember our Facebook page, y'all. Michelle?
Facebook.com/Stirring It Up Radio. And that's Stirring, no G on the end.
Stirring It Up. That's exactly right. Y'all, we love you. Go choose some of these books for your library. Build your library every week. Go take those recipes. Accept every tomato you can get. Accept it from your neighbor. You need them.
This is Cheryl Castile. Join me each week on The Exchange when we'll hear the stories and meet the people that make South Louisiana such a wonderful place to call home. Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 3 a.m. here on listener-supported public radio, KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
This is Luther Dickinson from the North Mississippi All-Stars, inviting you to visit E-Town this week. I'll be joined by Nick and Helen, Big Al Anderson, and the winner of the E-Achievement Award. That's this week in E-Town.
Tuesday at noon on KRVS.
Daddy Cecil here. For 2 hours of word sound power, Rasta Reggae Radio, it's Jam On.